Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It is the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to have everybody with us here as we plod through the dog days of summer. Don't let it get you down. Are you hot? Are you sticky, sweaty? Are you just trying to find air conditioning anywhere you can? Well, listen to this. I've got some relief in store. That's right. CNBC reports that North Korea will be reopening for international vacationers and visitors starting in December. That's right, North Korea in December, because, you know, winter is really when you want to go to North Korea, which is, so I mean, just ask Chesty Puller how nice it is in North Korea in the winter. You know, when I was in the service, when I first got in the service, I was a boot and I didn't know anything, I didn't know what was going on. The first place I went was called Cold Weather Training. Cold Weather Training. They gave us what you call Mickey Mouse boots. These were boots that were made of rubber that you would inflate them with nitrogen. And I was like, where are we going? Like the moon? You're giving me boots that I can inflate with nitrogen? How cold is it going to be? And you had gloves. You didn't have just a pair of gloves. You had a pair of gloves made of wool that went on the inside. You had another pair of gloves that went on the outside made of, I don't know what it was. But you couldn't do anything once you had all this stuff on. Once you were dressed to survive the winter at cold weather training, there was no way you could fight. But fortunately, a bullet probably couldn't get through all the stuff you had on. So and that was in South Korea. In fact, that was at the southern tip of South Korea where I went to cold weather training. So if you're hot and you're feeling a little sticky, just look forward to a December visit to North Korea. Right up there along the Arctic Circle there, just south of the Arctic Circle. According to CNBC, foreign tourists will be permitted to the North Korean city of Samjeon by December, and other areas of North Korea could potentially become accessible. Unfortunately, the only nationality restricted from travel to North Korea are South Koreans. So the North Koreans don't let the South Koreans in for obvious reasons, what with the Cold War and everything. This is a real throwback story, right? You all probably forgot that there was a Cold War, but there is, right along the 38th parallel in Korea. And so the North Koreans, because of the Cold War situation, they don't let the South Koreans in. And then, the free South Koreans are not allowed to travel into North Korea. And then the only nationality restricted from leaving North Korea are the North Koreans. They're, and then, of course, anyone else that Kim Jong-un can kidnap, they're not allowed to leave either. So plan your trip accordingly. So Winter Wonderland, North Korea in December. So we'll link to some of the tourist company videos that I'm sure are forthcoming. Now, from there, we're going to stay in North Korea, believe it or not, from the Real Politic file. Russians are receiving advanced missiles and lots of artillery shells from North Korea. So you wonder to yourself, why do the Russians want to be friends with the North Koreans? It just seems, it's like, what good could possibly come from being friends with a communist dictator who basically has imprisoned tens of millions of people? And then you read a story like this and you go, oh yeah, they're really good for artillery shells when you're at war in Ukraine and you're Russia and you have no moral compass, Russia, famous for no moral compass for millennia, actually. And so that's why they're friends with the North Koreans and the Iranians, because I guess a slave state is reliable for our artillery shells, and Russia happens to need lots of them right now. And so The North Koreans have been supplying missiles, rockets, and artillery shells for the Russian war in Ukraine. And this past week, the Russians made a significant payment. Now, they had been paying in rubles, but last week they made a payment that is much more coveted by the North Koreans. The Russians apparently delivered 447 goats to North Korea in exchange for the artillery shells. That's right. It's been reported that Russia delivered 432 female and 15 male goats to their client state there in North Korea in exchange for the artillery shells that they will be lobbing onto the hapless Ukrainian soldiers conscripted by Joe Biden and his brother-in-law and his cousin and whoever else is running Ukraine, trying to blow up everything there before anybody finds out what was going on or whatever's going there. The Russian quarantine agency, Rossel-Hoznazor, approved the export of the goats after reviewing compliance. Listen to this. The Russians reviewed the compliance with sanitary conditions for goats before sending them into North Korea, where in North Korea, So one in six North Korean children under five suffer from stunted growth due to malnutrition. So the children in North Korea weren't all that concerned with compliance with sanitary conditions for the goats, but they were happy to get the goats, as were the Koreans, the North Koreans, I should say. So apparently the North Koreans have had some significant issues with animal husbandry. They're in the communist utopia. They can't seem to raise animals because all their animals end up inbred because the psychopathic communist maniac in charge is terrified of letting other animals into the country. So over the generations, you get a bunch of inbred animals and they all die off. It's very sad. And it's one of the reasons that I feel as an American, and maybe this is because I have... It could be because of my personal experience. I think that America is obligated to free North Korea. I feel like we really wimped out on our obligation there at the 38th parallel and got scaredy cat by the Chinese. And anyway, I think we should liberate North Korea. And if I was in charge, that would be on the top of my priority list. Would be to liberate North Korea. So goats imported between 20 and 30 years ago from South Korea. So a rich guy in South Korea, the guy who built Hyundai, is it Hyundai? Yeah. The guy who built Hyundai, he out of just the goodness of his heart, donated a bunch of goats to North Korea about 30 years ago, and they all got inbred. They're all dying off. And so North Korea's now got a shortage of goats due to inbreeding. So, no, that's not that. That's a different guy. That's a Cho Hyun. Anyway, that's another rich guy. He tried with the goats. The guy, the founder of Hyundai, Chung Ju Young, that's different, right? Cho Hyun is different than Chung Ju Young. It's hard to keep track of. But anyway, the founder of Hyundai, he brought 1,000 cows to North Korea back in 1998. And most of them died because, well, North Koreans, they say, do not raise cattle well, unquote. That's according to a professor at Hiroshima University there in Japan. He says North Korea does not raise cattle well. How does that happen? How many generations apart from civilization does it take to forget how to raise cows? I mean, pretty much you leave them in the field. They eat. They don't die. Give them water, grass. How hard is it? Well, the North Koreans are having a hard time. But if you want to go there for a vacation, they'll put you to put you up in a fine hotel at one of their Potemkin villages. If you would be the point man, I think we should send several divisions across the 38th parallel as soon as possible. But that's my own... I know we're not the policemen of the world. We can't be expected to liberate enslaved people, for crying out loud. We're only Americans, right? Okay, fine. I have a higher standard, I guess. because I won the Cold War, by the way. That's right, I was on duty. I was on duty when the Berlin Wall fell. That's right. Now, I didn't deliver any of the pickaxes myself, personally, but I did stand down the communist hordes. Stared them down there at the, I've been to the 38th parallel, as a matter of fact, and have made eye contact with North Korean soldiers with weapons. Now, I didn't have a weapon. I was on vacation, but I was in the service. It wasn't very scary. It was actually pretty eerie and bizarre. I was like, this doesn't feel real. It's like there's a North Korean that they tell me is at war with South Korea, but I know he's not going to shoot at me. I'm sitting here drinking a Coke, eating a bag of chips. It just didn't seem real. It was all very strange. But the enslavement of tens of millions of people by Kim Jong-un in North Korea is very real. And it's a shame that we bear some significant responsibility, in my opinion, for that situation. All right. Now, from the insurrection file, speaking of the Chinese and the North Koreans, the North Koreans are a client state of both the Chinese communists and the Soviet communists, which is now the Russians, which is now Vladimir Putin, and basically a criminal gang, which is what the Chinese Communist Party is, basically a criminal gang, but dressed up in political garb. Well, apparently, and we've reported on this before, Chinese police stations have been reported across the United States, Canada, Europe, and other countries. That's right. The Chinese Communist Party has police stations in major cities in the United States and Europe where the plainclothes Chinese police, these are Chinese police disguised as civilians living in America because we're a bunch of morons. And what they do is they identify Chinese expatriates who are critical of their government and they suppress them or otherwise harass them or sometimes kidnap them or sometimes kill them. Although there's no real proof or evidence that they've actually killed anyone. In fact, there's no real hard, solid evidence that any of these police stations actually exist, except for the Spain-based human rights organization Safeguard Defenders. They've identified 102 Chinese police service stations operating across 53 countries, and they're wondering why nobody will do anything about it. And the answer is, look down at your shoes. You know why you only paid $40 for those shoes? Because we let the Chinese operate police stations in our country. That's why. That's right. Look at your iPhone. How come the iPhone only costs $1,000? Is because we allow the Chinese to operate police stations in Minneapolis, for example. Oh, yes, that's right. There is one alleged. Now, this is only alleged, of course, because we don't have any hard evidence that the Chinese are even up, that they're even a problem. I mean, they make nice shoes, and they're really good with electronics. But there is an alleged Chinese Communist Party police outpost in Minneapolis, in the Twin Cities. That's right. And according to Breitbart, it is tied to a group called Minnesota Global, which Breitbart tells us is a Tim Walz organization. Tim Walz, that's the new vice president. They're trying to install communists. Shocker. So, by the way, that Chinese police station there in Minneapolis was not allowed to be burned down during the big flinch back in 2020. It seems like Tim and the other Democrats who run the machine there in Minneapolis, they only burned down the 5th Precinct police station. They did not burn down the Chinese Communist Party police station. And therefore, Tim Walz is now to be installed as the vice president at the next election. I think I have an article where someone calls this the most important election in human history. And now that's a new one that I hadn't heard. I already knew it was the most important election of my lifetime, but human history? Wow. All right, and speaking of that, a judge is Judge Juan Merchan is about to sentence Donald Trump to prison on September 18th, where I predict he will be led out of the courtroom in handcuffs and put in jail. So I think it's obvious at this point that Judge Merchan, and by the way, this is the trial around the dirty, I forget, but there's a prostitute of some sort involved, and Trump says he never even liked her, never even looked at her. She says they had a thing. He paid her some money to shut up, whatever. Typical American politics, right? Except these days it involves a boy. Trump's old-fashioned. It involves a female. That's why they hate him, because he's still. But anyway, the sentencing is coming. I think it's obvious that this has been the whole point of this trial, is to sentence Trump to prison. It's like a really bad play put on by really bad producers with really bad actors, the whole thing. It's like standing at the 38th parallel looking across going, this doesn't feel real. That's how the Mershon Trump hush money trial feels to me. But yet they will be able to carry it off in broad daylight and actually sentence the leading candidate for president to prison. They'll actually be able to carry it off, I believe, because there are no more God-fearing men in law enforcement or in the government or in the military. And at this point, I'm like, okay, if we can't storm across the 38th parallel, all you guys in the military, could you at least storm across the Potomac and take back Washington, D.C.? Down. All right. Yes. Yeah. That's a tough one. That's a tough one to turn down there. But eventually, you have to come back to reality. And so there. Now, in fact, speaking of coming back to reality, that brings us to the bad religion file. We come from the Democrat, the Communist Party, police stations operating in Minneapolis. From there, we come to the bad religion file. Where? Christian Post is, but that's ChristianPost.com. It's not a guy named Christian Post. It's ChristianPost.com, which is an allegedly Christian, obviously evangelical website. They report that the lesbian sociopath granddaughter of the late Reverend Billy Graham has endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris. That's right. During a Zoom call. She put on a Zoom. Oh, by the way, the Christian Post, they didn't call her a lesbian sociopath. That was my commentary inserted just in case. The Christian Post hasn't called anyone anything that could be even slightly controversial since I ever heard of the Christian Post. So anyway, I'll leave them alone. I'm not going to beat them up too badly because they do report this story, which is earth-shattering, right? To think that a family built on a foundation as solid as Billy Graham could end up with a bunch of psychopathic, sociopathic, lesbian freaks endorsing obvious communist heretics is shocking. Now, the lesbian sociopath granddaughter of Billy Graham endorsed Kamala on a Zoom call for fear of germs and a general lack of enthusiasm. It wasn't like she was going to get on a plane or, you know. As a matter of fact, the lesbian sociopath granddaughter of the late Billy Graham, Jerusha Duford, that's her name, she spoke in a recorded video because she was not even able to attend the live Zoom call. She had to phone in a video. So at this point, you're like, wait a second, is this even real? Does Billy Graham even have a lesbian sociopath granddaughter, or are they just making all this up? I mean, because you just don't know anymore with the deep fakes and the AI and all that. I just don't. I could have done a little more background. I did make sure that this Jerusha Duford existed. I clicked and, but maybe I was misled by the clicks. It's hard to say. It does sound hard to believe that an endorsement could be taken seriously when you couldn't even make the Zoom call. Forget coming down to a rally in person. You couldn't even get out of bed long enough to make the Zoom call. Okay. Well, anyway, the Zoom call also included, speakers such as Adam Kinzinger. He's the weeping trans woman Republican, you might remember.
Trans woman.
Uh-huh. And then listen to this. Another speaker there was public theologian Ekemini Uwan. So I've never heard of a public theologian before, but I think that's probably a self-proclaimed title. He has claimed that whiteness is wicked. Churches should pay reparate. The Christian church should pay reparations to people of African descent. We don't know how many of these were able to actually gin up the motivation to make the live Zoom call. It might have all been videos phoned in, kind of like the whole Democrat campaign is a phone-in project. But so anyway, the granddaughter of Billy Graham said in her recorded video, because she was still asleep, she said in 2016, Donald Trump bragged about assaulting women. Leaders of my faith then propped up this man as a poster boy for godly manhood and leadership. And then, of course, now I'm reading this and I stop and I'm like, she's got a point about that. Mm-hmm. You hate to give the lesbian sociopath a point, but modern evangelicals have certainly done that. They've given her a point. Then she says, people who were curious about Jesus have done a 180 and walked away in the other direction from my faith. And I'm like, whose faith? Your faith? What is your faith? You just talked about your faith. And she did mention Jesus, but she says Donald Trump is driving people away from Jesus. So she actually has another point. Mm-hmm. Not that being a lesbian sociopath doesn't drive people away, but anyway, she went on to reference Isaiah 1:30 without actually quoting it. She just used some of the words from it. And she said, Isaiah talks about an oak whose leaves wither and a garden going without water. And then she mumbled on and stumbled about something. Endorsing Kamala Harris. Endorsing a communist maniac to be the ruler of the free world. So forgive me if I question the faith of, Duford. Forgive me if I question the sincerity of lesbian sociopath Jerusha Duford, even though she's the granddaughter of the Right Reverend Billy Graham, whose credentials were at least sullied, in my opinion, especially later in his career, as he became truly pathetic, groveling before Bill Clinton. I couldn't believe it. And anyway, whatever. All he did was he put up the big tent and he counted how many people he got to come forward and say the prayer with him. And somebody needed to tap Reverend Billy on the shoulder and say, Billy, you're not the one to close the deal on the salvation. You're there to present the gospel, and then God closes the deal. Billy, this isn't a numbers game for you. And then he ended up, he came to do good, and then he did very well indeed. In fact, his lesbian sociopath granddaughter is obviously operating on the fumes of his fortune. Because while she does have ties to the Lincoln Project, which I can't remember who they are, but they're another sociopathic lesbian LGBT freak organization, if I'm not mistaken. Their website describes her as an LGBTQ+ friendly licensed professional counselor. Talk about a position to drive people away from Jesus Christ. If that's not it, I don't know what it is. Let's see. She supports Evangelicals Concerned, Inc., an organization that advocates for evangelicals to support same-sex marriage. There you go. So that's Billy Graham's legacy. And, of course, you can't blame Billy for his grandchildren. They've been victimized by the culture as much as anyone else. But for anyone to parade, for the Christian Post to parade her onto the pages of their magazine as if her opinion matters about anything relating to Christianity shows that the Christian Post has lost its way and they've gone astray. I'm glad I was never taking advice from from ChristianPost.com. So I hope you haven't been either. From there we go from the, if not the death of evangelicalism, at least the embarrassing accident that needs to be cleaned up of evangelicalism. From there we go to the death by democracy file, where this past week, some of the best hackers in the world gathered in Las Vegas. That's right. And they were assigned to try to break into the voting machines that will be used in this year's upcoming election, the most important election in all of human history. And Politico reports that while this is a valuable exercise to identify vulnerabilities, potential vulnerabilities, because to assert that there are vulnerabilities means you're an election denier and you're a QAnon tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist. These are potential alleged vulnerabilities that may or may not be discovered by the foremost hackers in the world at a convention out in Las Vegas. The problem, Politico says, the findings of the hackers will likely come too late to make any fixes before November 5th. Because you know how long it takes to change computer stuff. You know, you have to make injection molds, and there's carving that has to go on, and then there's a structural design and testing, and it takes months to fix anything with a computer, you know, because it's all electronic, and you can pretty much type it in like in a night if you need to. I mean, if you find a problem, especially, you just get a bunch, you get enough geeks on it, and you can fix it relatively quickly, but they act as if there's no way we could fix these things. And furthermore, Politico reports that the Voting Village Project was the hacking event the hacking project on the voting machines was not on the main show floor. It was not even done in public because event organizers said it had to be kept behind closed doors to ensure security. That's right, because apparently election deniers have been showing up at this yearly hack fest, basically saying, how are you allowing these people to hack into the voting machines in front of God and everybody and nobody does anything about it? And so they don't like to hear that. And so they put this behind the big curtain. And then according to Politico, this is Politico, by the way, this is a left-wing pile of deviants. This is not a conservative news outlet. They say the findings, at times ignored or resisted by the voting machine manufacturers, have increasingly become accepted in Washington, and the event is often seen as a key for boosting the security of machines. Really? You expect me to believe that? I have a hard time believing that. In fact, I have an easier time believing that this yearly hack fest is for finding out which hackers to hire closest to the elections. The ones that show you how they can break into the machines most easily, those are the ones that the DNC wants to hire in the days leading up to the election, during the early voting and the election and all of that. You want to make sure you have the right hackers on staff. I think this is a job interview for hackers to help us steal the election. That's what I think it is. And, of course, the Republicans, they walk away from this and they go back to Congress and they're, oh, we need to reform this voting system and rah, 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 and they don't do anything. So I don't know why. It's like somebody's got video of them doing something. Although, how could that be anymore? No one has any shame. How is it that you could blackmail a politician with a video of him doing something immoral? Maybe they got a video of him smoking cigarettes. That's it. So they hold that over. We'll let it out that you're a smoker. Oh, no, no, no. All right. So that was the Death by Democracy file. We have another one here. Another story from the Death by Democracy file. According to Pamela Geller reports that the United States Postal Service. That's right. You're familiar with the Postal Service? She says, United States Postal Service facilities are failing to follow proper election mail procedures. Now, not mail as in M-A-L-E, though they stopped following those procedures a long time ago at the post office. We're talking about mail, mail-in ballots, M-A-I-L, mail-in ballots, the post office is failing to follow proper procedures, she reports. Okay. Now, Pamela, I think that's putting it kindly. She goes on to say, and this, the post office, is who we're entrusting with the most important election in human history? That's where I got it here. Pamela Geller, according to Pamela Geller, this is the most important election in human history, and it's being entrusted to the post office that she kindly says are failing to follow proper election mail procedures. The real story is, and Pamela Geller lets us in on this, the real story is that Joe Biden signed into law the Postal Service Reform Act of 2022. Uh-huh. That I didn't know that. I didn't know that there was a reform of the post office in 2022. I thought Joe Biden slept through all of 2022.
He did.
That's right, he did. But still, this he managed to wake up long enough to sign this. Anyway, this codified this new Postal Service Reform Act. Codified the agency's mission and flooded the agency with money. You remember the post office was about to go broke. I remember that. It's been going broke ever since I was born, because like it's almost useless. You wondered, why does the post office stick around? Well, now we know why. So Biden and the Democrats flooded a bunch of money into the Postal Service, and the Republicans voted for it too, because you know it's the post office. We've got to save the post office. We need those votes. Although no one at the post office votes for Republicans. The post office is mostly manned by communists because the Democrats are great at building a deep state, and they've built one big enough to consume everything else. In my opinion, just based on observation over the last few years, and maybe 20 years. Anyway, the new mission at the post office is to deliver fraudulent mail-in ballots for Democrats and steal the election. Now, that's just Pamela Geller's opinion, and it's all just alleged, and there's no hard, solid evidence that anything like that could ever happen. Why? Well, because, I mean, if you look for evidence, they just tape poster board up over the windows, and then we can't see the evidence, and we're like, gosh, we don't have any evidence that they steal the election. All right. So there you go. And so that brings me to my commentary on the most important election of our lifetime or all of human history, or perhaps all of eternity. From eternity past to eternity future, there will never be an election as important as this one, and the post office is in charge. So anyway, I just want to remind everyone, mostly I want to remind the committee to re-elect, no, the committee to elect Donald Trump, what's it called, his campaign staff. I just want to notify Donald Trump's campaign staff. I don't know if other people have noticed this, but I noticed it. There have been two emergency landings of aircraft involving the Trump campaign in the past week or so. So in one of them, Donald Trump's plane had to make an emergency landing while Donald Trump was on the plane. And then this past week, the other guy, J.D. Vance, he was on the plane. His plane had to make an emergency landing because of mechanical problems. And now I would have to go back into the archives to dig up the list of how many people around Hillary Clinton died in mysterious plane crashes. But let me just say, it's more than for you or me or anyone else who ever lived. Nobody has known more people who died in mysterious plane crashes than Bill and Hillary Clinton. And I just want to say, to the Trump campaign, I think not only should you get your own Secret Service protection, the bulletproof glass and all that, I think you need to have your own ground crew at every airport. And I know that's probably difficult to do, but Don, you can't take the money with you, right? What are you going to do with it all? You're not going to live another 10 years. You might as well at least preserve your life through the election. So hire your own ground crew at every single airport, because I'm just saying. All right. Now, although I will say that at this point, I don't worry so much for Donald Trump's life anymore. I think the fix that's been put in, it looks to me to be sufficient so that the Democrats won't actually have to kill Donald Trump. So it looks like they're going to be able to successfully steal the election from him, which means they won't have to actually kill him. Now, they will put him in prison because that's part of the deal, but they won't have to actually kill him. Now, and now maybe you've heard the term, because the Democrats really pulled off something, I mean, impressive on a political, from a political perspective. I mean, evil, devious, unlawful, and wicked, yes, all that. But politically, Machiavellianly impressive. You maybe you've heard the old phrase, you don't change horses midstream, he said to his extremely attractive audio engineer. She said, no, she's never heard that. Well, that's because that is a phrase from America's cowboy past. You don't change horses midstream. The idea is, well, you're not familiar with America's cowboy history? So the idea is, if you're riding a horse across a river and the water's about chest deep, you don't go changing horses in the middle. It's not a good idea. That's from America's cowboy past. But today that's been reimagined in America's third world present. That's right. The Democrat Party's almost effortless change. They changed midstream, but they didn't change horses. They changed camels. They changed camels midstream. And it looks like that will allow them to steal the election. It just looks like they could probably pull that off at this point. And the fact that the MAGA Nation, by the way, how could MAGA Nation allow them to steal the election with a woman who obviously can't get enough votes, but they're going to pretend she did, and then they're going to be able to pull it off? How could MAGA Nation allow that to happen? I think it's because MAGA Nation is almost as drugged and distracted as the Democrats, so that no one has the wherewithal to create too big of a fuss about anything anymore. As long as they have their sports, their pornography, and their video games, and their entertainment, everybody in MAGA Nation, I mean, they'll complain and yell and scream and get tattoos with Trump to show their outrage after the election is stolen. But they'll basically go along to get along, because what's really important is their sports, pornography, video games, entertainment. That's, as long as they get that, then the great camel swap of 2024 will just be, well, it'll be a thing of political legend in amongst the Democrats. It'll be commemorated for years to come over there at the Democrat Politburo. And over at MAGA Nation, it'll just be a brief interruption, a chance to vent as they watch their civilization crumble before their eyes. And then they'll go back to the TV and turn that on. And by the way, the Democrat machine over there in Chicago, the DNC is coming this week, the Democrat National Committee meeting there in Chicago. And they have basically built a wall of steel reinforced by men with guns around the DNC. It's basically a steel fortress with gun barrels pointing out at everybody, which they're allowed to do without any irony, right? They're anti-gun, they're anti-wall, and then they have a wall of guns around the DNC, and nobody calls them on it. I don't get it. Anyway, the DNC is far more secure than our border, but that is all by design, believe me. And why are the Democrats allowed to get away with this without anyone calling them out on the irony of their wall of guns around there? Well, it's the condition of MAGA Nation, obviously, that's one. But it's also, they will have a free abortion and vasectomy tent set up. And so if you support abortion, you're pretty much allowed to get away with just about anything. On all sides of the political aisle, by the way. Well, maybe not late-term abortions. I mean, let's be reasonable. But, you know, abortions that I might need for myself or one of my children might need an abortion. And so those abortions, if we do them early enough. Anyway, so the Democrats, well, I don't know if they're actually going to have an abortion tent, but they say they're giving away free abortions and vasectomies at the DNC. And I don't know why they wouldn't just get set up a tent and get it done right there. So they may have an actual tent on. Yes, they are giving away free abortions and vasectomies for attendees at the DNC, so that everyone inside the perimeter will have all the freedom they can handle for the duration of the convention. Yes, free abortions and vasectomies. And from what I understand, Kamala Harris herself is providing an open bar. That's right, every night for the whole convention. Although I think that's pretty much standard operating procedure. So let's come back from the Democrat National Convention out there in Chicago. Did we miss the break? I think we missed the break. I don't think we've ever done that before. How did that happen? Well, we're just going to keep going because we'll just keep going. From the Democrat National Committee and the steel wall of guns surrounding the facility there, we go from there to the widespread panic file where the World Health Organization has declared a fake. That's right, a fake. You remember? A fake is a PHEIC, a public health emergency of international concern, pronounced fake. So the World Health Organization convened its emergency committee last week. Was there an emergency? Well, it's the emergency committee. And when they convene it, that means there's going to be an emergency, I think. I think that means there's going to be an emergency. Can I speak? I think that means there's going to be an emergency. Because after all, why else would the emergency committee be convened? It's to declare a fake. Let's see. The emergency committee consists of independent experts, and they convened the committee virtually for fear of germs and a general lack of enthusiasm and seriousness, and also remembering that they can pull off almost anything in broad daylight in front of almost everyone and not be questioned like they did with the COVID hysteria. So they just figure it's the same old thing, except everybody has smoked more weed since then, and so it should probably be easier this time. So they convened virtually to advise the World Health Organization Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus on the outbreak of the new monkeypox virus. I know, you thought the monkeypox didn't work. And they called all that off because everyone realized how dumb it was. But they're not giving up. They remember 2020. There's no way they don't think they can pull just about anything off. So anyway, they give us a bunch of details on the outbreak and how it's more virulent and terrifying. And it's escaped the borders of a few African countries and now it's spreading. And so they declared a public health emergency of international concern, a fake. A fake being the highest level of alarm that can be declared by the WHO. And how do you know? Because it's called a fake right in front of your face. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said that the situation constitutes a fake. I have accepted that advice. I have accepted that advice, said Ghebreyesus there. And we can expect that this is the first of what should be, what could be and what should be a steady stream of fakes through the inauguration of the next American president in 2025 when we all get past the most important election in all of eternity. You come the man with a look in his eye. It's fair or nothing but full of pride. Look at him go, look at him kick. Makes you wonder how the other half live. The devil inside, every single one of us. The devil inside, every single one of us. The devil inside. It's the Weekly Worldview. Yeah, pretty scary stuff, right? Yeah. That guy was onto something there. Okay. So from the fake over at the WHO, we go, well, deeper into the widespread panic file where we have a report about the United States Department of Agriculture has ordered expanded bird flu testing for beef, meaning cows, not beef, like not at the store. Although they could start doing that because who's going to question them? She come into the store and say, we're going to test your beef for bird flu. And nobody's willing to say, you people are out of your mind. Get out of my store. So instead, they would let them do it. But no, this is cattle. Why? Because, as you know, cattle are dropping dead from bird flu all over the place, and they're spreading it to humans. Not at all. Not at all. But the United States Department of Agriculture is going to expand bird flu testing in living cows starting in September. Why? Because with mass testing, there will be more cases, and with more cases, they may be able to stir up another fake. It's possible. I mean, it's worth a shot, right? We've pulled this off before. According to a report by the Jerusalem Post, Department of Agriculture officials on this past Tuesday, on a call with reporters, because no one has the motivation to actually get together anymore. Let's Zoom it in and destroy the world virtually. So they had a call with reporters and staff from health agencies. Health agencies. Color me suspicious. They said that the testing will begin in mid-September, and they urge livestock workers to remain vigilant. Remain vigilant against a flu virus, which is delusional. You can't be vigilant against a flu virus. I think that these workers, livestock workers, they need to remain vigilant against anyone wanting to come and inspect their cows for bird flu. Tell them, get off my property. You people are out of your minds. I am willing to take the risk. I don't need you to declare a fake in order. All right. So anyway, so they're on two fronts now. The psychopathic, criminally insane sex cult that seized the government during the big flinch back there in 2020. They're moving on two fronts with the fear campaign. And then, of course, they got the post office and they got the voting machine hacking going on that front. And so, I mean, I feel like Chesty Puller. I feel like I'm surrounded. Uh-huh. But you know, Chesty Puller, he said, hey, now that you got me surrounded, now I can just fight in any direction I want. And he did at least manage to extract his troops before they were utterly slaughtered, which is probably the best we can hope for at this point. At least in a worldly sense. At least in a temporal sense. Thank God that in an eternal sense that all of this is relatively peanuts, small potatoes, peanuts. It's peanuts, Doug. Don't worry about it. Now we go from the fake and the bird flu. From there we go to the like a suicide file where the United Kingdom's new prime minister, Keir Starmer. Keir Starmer, which, I mean, that sounds like the made-up name of a comic book supervillain. That's right. Suddenly out of the darkness appeared Keir Starmer. It just sounds, I don't know, you can't make this up. How does this guy end up the prime minister of England? Never heard of him, don't know where he came from. Now he's the prime minister. He says he's personally committed to changing the law that outlaws assisted death. What is assisted death? Didn't we used to call that murder? Doesn't that mean helping someone to die? That, which isn't really help, by the way. The folks over at Live Action, do you not have an editor who can at least edit out the insanely Marxist, leftist, godless urinalism? I mean, can't you fix this before you go to... I guess not. Everybody's lazy anymore. But anyway, assisted death. That used to be murder. Like, you know, remember what happened with Vince Foster? Speaking of people who died around Bill and Hillary. I mean, he really died right there around Bill and Hillary, but they found him in a park the next morning. Shot himself twice in the head. Weird. Over there, back to England with the suicide. Former Lord Chancellor Charlie Falconer introduced legislation to legalize assisted suicide and euthanasia. Euthanasia, by the way, that's murder. And then assisted suicide, that's murder. But now we have two different categories because there's two different ways in England to murder people legally, which I'm sure it'll all go fine after that because, you know, it's not like you've crossed a Rubicon. Starmer has noted his support. He's going to make sure that the ministers of parliament there have time for a free vote on the bill, which allows MPs to vote according to their conscience rather than according to party lines. And you read that and you think, what does that even mean? Wouldn't you always vote according to your conscience? Apparently not. And then it's like well known that they don't. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Maybe we need to change something. No, let's just continue to march, old chap. Keep your chin up, lad. It's a long, long way to Tipperary. Let's see. The last time England voted to kill itself, there was a clear vote against it. But, says the new communist ruling party there in England, they say of the 650 ministers who were present in 2015 and said, no, we don't want to kill ourselves, 477 of them are gone. Now, they haven't been killed or killed themselves, but they've left the parliament. And we're told by the new communists in charge, it's a completely new House of Commons with a prime minister who's saying, if you decide in favor of suicide, the government will make sure that it becomes law. And I don't know, is he giving himself, is he telling them that now I'll have the permission to actually kill you? I think he is telling them that, but they don't realize that. Because Europe is marching headlong, half asleep, into a slaughter of epic proportions. Meanwhile, who was this? Falconer is the former Lord Chancellor who is apparently still in charge of something. He cited an increase in assisted death laws throughout the world as a sign that the United Kingdom should also change its laws. You know, because so many other countries are changing their laws, that's a sign we should change ours to legalize suicide. Well, it's a sign, all right. Give them that. And so from there we go to the Dim New World file where we stay in England, where the United Kingdom's National Health Service personnel are being mandated to ask everyone if they're pregnant before carrying out radiography, even if they're obviously men. That's right. It's part of the new inclusive guidance of the Keir Starmer government there. The new mandate was introduced following an alleged incident where a trans man, which is a biological woman, was unknowingly pregnant and underwent a CT scan, and no one thought to ask if what they looked like a man. And so the solution is, let's, instead of outlawing this insanity about men changing into women and dressing as women and making that illegal like it's been for like 5,000 years, instead of that, let's just ask the men if they're pregnant too. That's the solution. I know, it's like a George Carlin joke. It's ridiculous. Anyway, there's a report about one male patient who was scheduled to see a radiologist who became so annoyed and outraged at the questioning about pregnancy on the form that he shouted and left the department and didn't actually receive a scan. That's me. That's what will happen to me. They'll ask me if I'm pregnant, and they'll end up having, the police will have to come and carry me out of there because I'll just lose it. All right. Now, from there, so what does this all produce? So this is when people are forced to deny obvious reality on a regular basis, and then they consent to doing so in order to get along. What does that produce? It produces long-term psychosis and hatred and murder. So let's just go quickly. We'll close on a few stories here. From the Justice file, Nathan Morris was on a walk with his wife and daughters. His daughters are ages 2 and 5 years old. So the guy's walking through his neighborhood with his little kids and near their home in Canton, Michigan, around noon last Saturday. Their neighbor, Devereaux Johnson, confronted the dad, and the two got into an argument. So the dad, Devereaux Johnson, the neighbor, he was reportedly upset that what the dad's little daughter had touched the mulch on his property. The kids are 2 and 5 years old, and the neighbor is so upset that they touched the mulch in his yard that he gets into a confrontation with the dad. So dad sends his family home. He's going to try to defuse the situation. The neighbor ends up shooting dad and killing him. When the police arrived, they discovered Dad had been shot. Listen to how they report this. When the police arrived, they discovered Morris with a gunshot wound in the street. With a gunshot wound. Anyway, do you get this? How they report this? How they take the edge off the fact that this guy just shot and killed a guy for having his little kid touch his mulch, and they say the police found him with a gunshot wound. As if he was walking down the street and he caught a gunshot wound because, you know, there's something going around. It's insidious and diabolical, the urinalism. Anyway, when the police arrived, the dad, Nathan Morris, had been shot and killed. Oh, no, I'm sorry. He was taken to a hospital where he later died, as if maybe he caught a cold or a COVID or monkeypox or something. And he died at the hospital. It's not that he was shot and killed by his maniacal neighbor over a five-year-old touching his mulch. No. And they even mentioned that the dad was found with a gunshot wound in the street. Why mention the street? Why would you even mention the fact that he was found with a gunshot wound in the street? You mention the street to diminish the shooting in the mind of the reader. You just add a few extra words to diminish the shock. It's all a diabolic. It's basically urinalism is designed to mainstream violent content into the minds of the people. And so that we all become conditioned to accept a certain level of violence. So anyway, just after several orders to surrender, the maniac who shot the dad in the head came out of his house, repeatedly saying, quote, "Praise to God Almighty," unquote. And he was taken into custody and charged with first-degree murder and other felonies. Why other felonies? Because, well, for the sake of the justice industry. We have a lot of lawyers who need to make a living. We have people who go to college now to be criminalists. So we have people rely on this to make this particular murder. I mean, this will support the living and the partial retirement for dozens of people in the justice industry. So they charge him with a whole bunch of things besides just shooting the dad to death. The killer lived in the neighborhood for 12 years, had on multiple occasions assaulted neighbors as well as police officers. And he had criminal sex charges against him in the 1990s. But he was allowed to... Why? We may never know until we get into eternity because there won't be time because there will be a pile of other bodies over the next week or two. And there won't be time to follow up on this. The prosecutor, by the way, is asking for a competency hearing for the maniac. Why? Because he's a part of the industry. And there are people who do the competency hearings. They need to make a living, too. So let's find out if this maniac who shot the guy whose kid touched his mulch, let's find out if he's a maniac. Let's document that for the sake of the industry. Because that's a part of initiating the multi-year process of churning this particular killer through the machine in order to extract the maximum amount of money and prideful self-righteousness to be placed on the altar of the bureaucracy and burned. That's why we're going to have a competency hearing. That's just the first step in the religious ritual that they're all involved in. Meanwhile, out in Burlington, Iowa, David Carpenter called the police late last Sunday night to say that he'd shot his father. The police arrived, and they took Carpenter into custody in his front yard. Carpenter's father was found inside the home with a gunshot wound to the face. The two were arguing. The dad and the son were arguing about the son's stinky feet. Yeah, there was a heated argument between the two of them that started over an accusation around stinky feet, but the argument became heated when they got into, quote, family issues, unquote, at which point the son grabbed his gun, pointed it at the father's face, and then, quote, accidentally pulled the trigger, unquote, shooting his own father in the face over an argument about stinky feet. But it wasn't really about stinky feet. That was just a clickbait headline. Burlington man shot father after argument over stinky feet. But if you read the article, The argument was about family issues. Family issues. So in a family that now for generations has been somewhat forced by society, but in other cases simply going along to get along. A family that has regularly denied reality on a regular basis chronically, and that produces insanity, it produces murder. So you get into an argument about family issues, and in the past, you might yell at each other, slam the door. Now you pull a gun. Anyway, now let's go one more here from the domestic tranquility file. We haven't done these in a while because, to be honest with you, it gets really difficult to do these stories because there's so many of them every week that you could just do a show just on the family detonations every week, easily an hour, 5 or 6 hours. And here from the domestic tranquility file, a Minnesota woman is facing multiple charges in Otter Tail County, Minnesota. Veronica Rolene Gast is facing 2 counts of domestic assault, 1 count of second-degree assault, 1 count of criminal operation, and maybe more if we can think of some more because, you know, we've got people making a living here. She has been charged after hitting her boyfriend with her car in Fergus Falls, there in Minnesota. Gast and her boyfriend were driving to therapy to work on their relationship. So when they got into an argument, she told him to get out of the car. When he got out of the car, he walked around the front and she tried to run him over. Bounced him up over the front of the car, broke the glass, shattered the glass in the windshield. Uh-huh. That's right. They were driving to therapy. They wanted to work on their relationship. The two had been dating for roughly a year and were living together. Oh, I'll say they've been dating roughly for a year. At least the whole situation ended up rather roughly. But this is a cautionary tale. This is what happens when you live together and you've been told that living together is okay. But what living together is denying reality on a daily basis. And you end up hating one another. I mean, maybe not to the point where you hit the other one with a car. Maybe you even get married and try to make a go of it. But you end up hating each other in the biblical sense of not understanding how to fully love one another. Because you live together because everyone told you you could, when in reality you can't. That ruins it. That breaks it. That makes it less than it should be. Could be. You shouldn't do it. And this is just, now that we have a generation or two or three that have grown up denying obvious reality over and over all day so that they could indulge themselves in sports and pornography and entertainment and video games and have their life and their second car and go on vacation. And so in order to secure all that for themselves, they've just agreed to deny reality over and over all the time. And now it's to the point where when we get upset about the fact that we hate each other, we hit each other with our cars. That's all this is. This is the natural extension of all of that. By the way, the girlfriend claims that driving into her boyfriend was an accident. Why? Because people are allowed to just laugh in the justice system's face these days with no concern for any consequences. I shot my father in the face with a gun at point-blank range by accident. Well, when I pointed at him and pulled the trigger, I didn't mean to. And you're allowed to say that in court. And she's allowed to say, yeah, I bounced him up over and broke the whip, but it was an accident. I stepped on the gas because I hated him so much I wanted to kill him, but it was an accident. And then she's allowed to say that in open court because everyone in court is delusional and they're operating in a fantasy land and they're basically just going by, getting by to get along to make a living in the industry. That's all. That's what it all is. All right, finally, some other fruit of this. The last Denny's in San Francisco is closed. That's right. They had to close because of crime and just every other thing you can imagine. Denny's in Oakland closed. In-N-Out Burger in Oakland closed. This is the freedom purchased by the hippies. Right? Actually, it was given to them by their parents who, you know, the greatest generation was worn out by World War II and they chose to serve mammon instead of God after the war, and Satan won World War II. The hippie generation is proof of that, and the fruits of his victory are now ripe and overflowing and rotting in the streets of San Francisco. That's it for the Weekly Worldview. Should the Lord tarry, we'll be back next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.